Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. The largest number of African-American residents of Cincinnati from 1830 through 1950 lived in the basin. But Walnut Hills, especially on the streets clustered around Lane Seminary on Gilbert Avenue near Lincoln, attracted the largest concentration in one of the hilltop neighborhoods. With that residential base, Walnut Hills also became a major locus of African-American-owned businesses. Some were small retail establishments catering to the neighborhood residents. A few, like the Hotel Mance, owned by entrepreneur Horace Suddeth, was a regional institution with a national reputation. Members of the Walnut Hills Historical Society have been researching and collecting information on minority-owned businesses once based in their community. We are joined now by Sue Plummer, who is the chair of the Walnut Hills Historical Society, and Jana Bradley, who is an active member of the Society, and Joanne Morse, who's also an active member of the Society. Welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you.
Let's begin, and I don't know, Sue, let's begin with you, since you're the chair. What are the range of businesses that you've been working on identifying and trying to find information about?
It's really broad. Anything from all sorts of hair culturists, mostly women, some barbershops, professionals in all the professions, restaurateurs, caterers, hoteliers,
automotive repair.
Yes, thank you, Janae.
Dressmakers. Tailors.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Dry cleaners.
Lots of automotive-related shops also, repairs and sales.
There were a number of businesses that I'm aware of. So something like a couple of savings and loans. My family, my father was the head of a savings and loan his entire career. So I care a lot about savings and loans. These were really grassroots organizations that help people save and buy houses. There are two significant ones in Walnut Hills, Major Savings and Loan and Industrial Savings and Loan, which Horace Suddeth started. And then these two came together.
Right.
And these really become real foundation stones for the community, right, Janae? Mm-hmm.
Definitely so. And if you think about it in the context of time and that it was challenging for African Americans to secure loans at other locations, it was great to have two major and then banking institutions in our neighborhood to provide that opportunity for the thriving Black community in Walnut Hills and beyond.
You know, one of the things to remember, I think, about all of this is that these minority-owned, African-American-owned businesses were part of a larger complex in Walnut Hills. Walnut Hills was a huge, People's Corner was second only to the downtown business district in terms of the proliferation of businesses, especially once the streetcar becomes the major streetcar crossroads, and that's where everything comes together.
Mm-hmm.
So the businesses that you're exploring really are part of even a larger complex of businesses that are there.
Right.
Is Joanne, is that sort of the way you see it?
Yes, very much. And one of the things that's so interesting to us about the Black Business District is, again, just the depth and breadth of those businesses within that community. You start on Peebles Corner, go north on Gilbert, and it's like this long line of entrepreneurial businesses, larger businesses. All of that is part of the same development during the 20s, 30s, 40s, into the 60s.
By the way, I want to remind people that if you want to join this discussion, if you've got a story about a Walnut Hills business, we'd love to hear it right now. And you can call us at 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. One of the things that is a great way to sort of recover something about businesses is oral history. I think there's very powerful. And Cincinnati Edition's one of our producers, Selena Reeder, interviewed Nadir Rashid, the grandson of Ernest and Georgia Thatcher, who owned Thatcher's Fish and Poultry, one of the real staples of the Walnut Hills African-American business community. Nadir began working for his grandparents in the store when he was about 9 years old. And we've got just a little clip out of this hour-long interview, but let's listen to this. And I encourage everybody to listen carefully for what's revealed about the complexity of the Walnut Hills neighborhood at this time.
Ernest Thatcher Sr., he came from Mount Sterling, Kentucky. He had a third grade education, but he, like so many of other people migrating from the South to the North for jobs, he borrowed $500. And in 1932, $500 was a lot of money. But he borrowed the money. He opened up this little storefront, and he went down on Spring Grove near the stockyards, and he bought chickens. Most of his customers at that time were school teachers from Frederick Douglass Elementary School around the corner. So they supported him. And I was little. He would take a paper bag and roll it up and make a little hat for me. And then he would give an apron, and then he would fold it up so it would be just right length for me. And one day this man said, "Oh, Mr. Thatcher, your grandson, he's working hard back there." And my grandfather said, "Yeah, and when he gets old enough to really do some work, I ain't going to be able to find him." And we both laughed about that. And that kind of happened, but then I came back later. You could come in on Thanksgiving at that time and select a turkey that was walking and come back in half an hour, 45 minutes, and pick it up, ready to go home, eat it. And my grandfather, he worked until he died. There was no such thing for him as retire. He worked every morning. He would get up and go to work. I would see that every day. And I think that all of the grandkids saw that everybody got up and went to work. I mean, even as a 9-year-old, I had to work. And my grandmother, she was the great provider, and she was the maintainer, and she took care of everything. She even went to night school to learn how to do bookkeeping. And my grandfather, when he passed, everybody you could think of came to that funeral. Because anybody was hungry, they'd get fed. Between him and my mother, they would get fed. You know, if I don't have no money today, Miss Thatcher, but can I get, yeah, okay, you can get it. You know, they don't do that kind of stuff today. My grandfather decided that he was going to fill a niche that Kroger's did. See, at that time, Kroger's didn't sell fish. They sold chickens. But their chickens were processed somewhere else and brought in. But you still had people from that generation who appreciated the fact that they grew up when chickens were walking around the yard and they were eating chickens, you know. So they appreciated the fact that they could come in and get a chicken that was alive. And so they would come. But as far as the fish went, we had that locked up. The only other fish market was downtown in Finley Market. So they weren't really competition. It was people who lived downtown bought fish from them and people who lived out here. But we had a diverse customer base. We had the Jewish community bought chickens from us because the rabbi would come over, bless the chickens, and make sure they were bled correctly. My grandfather went to learn the Hebrew way of dressing chickens so that he could get their business. But then we also had a big Japanese contingent of people who would come in because they wanted their fish with the head still on. That was part of the custom. They didn't eat fish without the head. And then we had people who were raised in the South that still had African eating habits that carried over from slavery to where they didn't cut their heads off their fish. And every Friday and Saturday, that parking lot at Thatcher's would be jam-packed. People would come there simply because they couldn't get any credit at Kroger's. So people in the neighborhood would patronize us. This was before integration. So in a lot of places, they weren't welcome. It wasn't a question of where are you going to shop. It's a question of where can you shop. And so we got all of the business that way. We got all of the African-American business in the neighborhood, all of them. But all of the other businesses in the neighborhood, the same thing occurred. You know, Bernie's drugstore, the pharmacy on the corner, the doctor's building up the street, the dentist building up on the corner, you know, the restaurants. They were all supported by people in the neighborhood.
What I was fascinated by in that passage is all of the different groups who are operating, living in, buying in Walnut Hills. So there's reference to the Jewish community, to the Asian community. And just the dynamics, I think, are really fascinating that comes through just in a little five-minute clip. What was your reaction to that?
I think my initial reaction to that is he hit on something really important, and that these weren't just shops. These are places where community thrived. Being able to get credit when you didn't have the money because you knew the owners of the shop was so important. And I think what's so great about having these opportunities for people to tell stories is that this isn't the stuff that's captured in other places, right? You don't get the richness of the experience of Thatcher's just by reading. So being able, as the Historical Society, to hear these stories and capture these stories is critical to provide a well-rounded view of what the neighborhood was really like.
Right. And I think when you think about malls are created today, places are created for people to put shops into, this evolved over time. These shops added in a little bit at a time as land became available, as people moved up the hill with all the migrations through the city, through the neighborhood. And they were a community. It wasn't just the businesses. They were surrounded by houses that people lived in that could walk to the businesses that owned those businesses. And it was recognized all over the city as well. People came from other African-American communities to shop in Walnut Hills.
Certain stores were. And also just the dynamic inside the store. My in-laws owned a small grocery store. Now, this was in Mount Healthy. But this was the days before credit cards. Everybody ran a tab. You know, you could get credit on any one day because you were going to get a bill at the end of the month. But it was because the owner knew the people who were the customers. And there was just a different dynamic than what we're used to today. It wasn't just transactional business.
Exactly.
It was, as you were saying, Janae, it was community building.
Definitely. Nadir mentioned Frederick Douglass School, mm-hmm. and that was not just an educational institution. It was an institution which really built community. So if we think about the teens and 20s and the Great Migration, Frederick Douglass School, the Federation of Colored Women's Clubs, other institutions in that neighborhood knew about the Great Migration and deliberately reached out to those people for building community, integrating them in.
Well, we have a couple of callers. Our first one is Jimmy, and Jimmy has an observation about the comment I see is something about some of the problems that African-American businesses faced in Walnut Hills. Jimmy, what's your question or observation?
Yes, sir. Dan, how you doing today?
Pretty good.
Hey, Mr. Thatcher, that was right on point what you said. Mr. Thatcher was right on point. That was right down the middle of what he said. and Dan, when you talk about credit for the stores, but if Thatcher, Mr. Thatcher, Grandpa Thatcher, he didn't give you credit. What he done was, if you were short, if you were 25 cents, 30, 40 cents short, he let you go. And if you didn't have nothing, he'd feed you. So it wasn't about credit. That man was on, that Thatcher Stores and food was, man, they was right on point. Now, everything he said was right on point as far as people coming from all around shopping. Here's what happened. When the business of black business picked up out there, I want to ask you this question. Do you believe that the pricing of utilities, the cost to stay open, operating costs, the Cincinnati Gas and Electric companies and their local powerful business companies, I believe that they, I knew a guy named Eugene Fields, I knew him very well. Mr. Eugene Fields was some kin to the Thatchers. His family was. And I believe that he told me that they priced the utilities and the cost for most black businesses out there to stay open. They raised the cost of utilities, the cost of wholesale products to beat out Tasty Bird and the mother stores up at People's Corner because black folks passing People's Corner. So do you think that that happened, Mr. Thatcher, to your grandfather and other businesses? Because Thompson Brothers Cadillac was right up the street, and blacks went there to buy cars. People shop there. People work there. The hotel on Chapman around the corner. So do you think that's what happened?
So the question here is, what about the decline of the neighborhood business districts, the decline of minority-owned businesses? What have you learned as a historical society about that part of the story?
Mm-hmm. Well, the question about the utilities is an intriguing question, and it's something worth looking into, definitely. And we don't have clear answers yet. There are a lot of forces that were at work in the 20th century, anything from desegregation to the automobile and making cities automobile-friendly rather than walking-friendly, suburbanization, flight to the suburbs, all of the movement of all the different populations through the 20th century that came through the cities, whether they came from the South, whether they came from Europe, et cetera. There were a lot of forces at work. I know a situation we're dealing with today in terms of things like buying food, getting a grocery store back in the neighborhood is a...
Which was the topic of our first part of our show. Yes.
Price point. And it's hard for a small business to keep their prices low. And someone like a Kroger or a larger superstore...
A big box store.
...can afford to keep lower prices. They can afford to pay utilities. So, you know, I'm sure that movement towards larger stores has...
And I think we should be clear that that wasn't just... about Walnut Hills or
right.
People's Corner or Lincoln Avenue. This is a story of all of America.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And the status of small family-owned or one-off stores. It's just hard to compete in the corporate environment. It really,
yes.
really has changed things. So Jimmy, I think, had some interesting insights, but you've added some other things. Anybody else want to?
And thinking about it in the context of a lot of the work that we've done around the Black Business District has been the early to mid 1900s to the mid to late 1900s. And there's also a factor at play of race. So I think Mr. Jimmy's question is really compelling. And I would love to be able to say that it's completely outside of the realm of possibility. But thinking about the other forces at play during that time, I mean, it's a really intriguing question that I think worth.
Well, I think that's one of the things that he raised was we're talking about a time before desegregation or integration,
mm-hmm.
those actually are two different kinds of words,
mm-hmm.
Where people, African-Americans, really needed to go to African-American stores as much as possible. And once you change that dynamic, you undercut because people can go a lot of other places. And suddenly you don't have the built-in business clientele that you might have. So anyway, that's part of what's going on here too,
mm-hmm,
that
correct.
Sometimes things that we tend, say in the civil rights movement, tend to honor also have negative impacts. I think that's really part of what's going on. We have another caller. Mike is on the line, and Mike has a question which I think is more present-oriented than it is historically oriented, but we're all very capable people here. Mike, what's your question or observation?
Hi, I work at the Playhouse in the Park at the Scene Shop, and we actually took over an old roller skating rink here on Gilbert, right across from the Cadillac dealer. I drive up and down Gilbert every day, and you can still see the old Jewish bathhouse on the corner of, I think it's Taft and Gilbert, and a lot of the signs on the walls that just really demonstrate the old bones of the businesses up here. And also, since they finished the new MLK exit, they're actually revitalizing a lot of the area. That shopping center that used to be People's Corner is currently being renovated to hopefully house new stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just think it's cool that, you know, there's still people building things in an area that used to be quite industrial, and that hopefully it's up and coming again. And unfortunately, the Kroger closed, and
right.
there is kind of a food desert around here a bit, but it looks promising anyway.
Well, let me ask my guest. What's your observation about what's promising, what's happening in the business district right now? And secondly, how would you hope that the work you're doing to remind people of the history of this community and the role of minority business might infuse future development? So I think it's really a two-pronged question.
Right. Please, I think Janae is a good person to start this off.
Thank you, Sue. So a couple of years ago in Walnut Hills, we created a neighborhood reinvestment plan. And in that reinvestment plan, we highlighted the Lincoln-Gilbert space where the Historic Black Business District was centrally located as a place that we wanted to pay attention to for development. And I think that we have a great opportunity right now in that the Historical Society is doing a lot of research on the Historic Black Business District so that that information can inform the way that we develop and the things that we celebrate in that space. Sue, I hope Sue talks about this, is working on a really cool project with an artist to highlight some of the businesses, whether it's through ads or I don't know where Janet Creekmore has landed, but there's already some small things at play to highlight just all of the richness of that part of this part of our neighborhood.
Right. Well, first of all, the caller identified some businesses, some former and current. The Paramount Building, which is on People's Corner, it's the iconic.
With the tower.
Right, right. That's going to be the city's first African-American brewery. The Safarino's, or the Royal Skating Palace, is now the Playhouse's storage facility. That's an old skating rink that's been around since at least the 20s and has both has a history in all the communities of Walnut Hills. The bathhouse he mentioned is, I believe that's the Comfort Station, which was a public bath on the...
Yeah. Well, listen, I have run out of time, but I want to thank all of my... guests here today, the second part of the show, Sue Plummer, Janae Bradley, and Joanne Morris. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. I'm Dan Hurley. Stay tuned to 91.7 for Here and Now, coming up next.